It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for being with me. I'm doing what I guess has sort of become my annual show from the coast of Maine. Say annual because I've done it 24 years in a row this time of the year. So come the calendar turning to the middle part of August, I found myself on the coast of Maine much of my life, and this year is no different. So I'll take a moment to start off the show with a little bit of news from New England, and or in particular, a little bit of news from Maine, a place that I come to know very well throughout really all of my life. First of all, this winter didn't make the Chicago news, but this winter delivered two absolutely horrific nor'easters, as they like to call them. We would call them northeasters. They call them nor'easters, to the coast of Maine, which did very significant damage. It's hard to do damage to granite, but they managed to. Many areas along the coast of southern Maine, all the way up through Camden, saw a record high tide back in January. With the storm, the storm surge exceeded 17 feet when you take the high tide and the storm surge. So the normal high tide during a storm in Maine, I think, is about 11 feet in southern Maine. The record was, I believe, 14 feet. The storm of this past January found the high tide and then the wind-blown surge on top of it exceeding 17 feet. It knocked out bridges. It knocked out lots of walking areas along the coast. I found that numerous places where you could walk along the coast previously are now closed because of the damage to the coast. Roads were knocked out. So that didn't make the news in Illinois or, in fact, across the rest of the country, but it certainly impacted southern Maine, and which is largely dependent on tourism. I learned the other day, and then, of course, you can learn everything now on Google. But I learned that Maine has more vacation houses, homes, than any other state in the country. And I thought that's not possible. I thought about Florida. Now, the answer is Maine has more vacation homes than any other state in the country. And as a friend of mine who told me this said, wouldn't you? Who wants to spend the winter in Maine? Winters in Maine can be pretty tough. You're on the North Atlantic. Summers can be very glorious. And it is the number, tourism is the largest industry in Maine. I think there are about 1,800,000 people or so who live in Maine permanently. And in the summer, the population swells to over 3.5 million. Not something that's generally on the radar screen for those of us in the Midwest. We go to Michigan or we go to northern Wisconsin or in southern Ontario or we go up to Minnesota. In my case, my radar trajectory has brought me to Maine all of my life, and I'm very glad it has. Each year I talk about lobsters. First of all, I love eating lobsters. But second of all, what's happening with lobsters shows that nature is not constant. And I won't go into the subject of climate change and global warming and all that today. We talk about that enough from time to time. Except to say, if you have enough years under your belt and the people who are older than you have enough years of observing in the same place, the same time, year after year, you do notice changes, and that's nature. In the case of lobsters in Maine, they are moving further off the coast into deeper water. Nobody's quite sure why. Is it because there are fewer predators out there? Is it because they've evolved that it's safer out there? Much harder to set up lobster pod in very deep water than it is in all along the Rocky Shoal coast, where, of course, the Maine lobsterman is so famous. But the number of lobster pots in southern Maine continues to decrease and decrease markedly, even from last year. But over 10 years, it's been an enormous movement of lobsters into deep water. The other thing that's happened, which I talked about extensively last year on the air with a wonderful lobsterman I've known all my life here in Maine, is Scott Doherty, is that they're moving north. They are walking along the ocean floor, and they are walking north. Lobsters are now caught all the way up into Maine, They're basically lobster wars, as I talked about last year, between United States and between Maine and Nova Scotia, as lobsters are moving up into that part of the world where there never really were any lobsters. So lobsters are moving north. The ocean has warmed a little bit. I mean, to you and me, a couple degrees warming, that makes a very cold swim into just simply a cold swim. Very seldom does the water in the Atlantic here in Maine get above the mid-60s, so it's cold no matter what you want to look at it. But to you and me, 62 degrees and 65 degrees, not so much difference. Still cold. Apparently, that's enough of a change for lobsters to go, we have to go elsewhere, and they are. So the other thing that's happened in recent years is the striped bass fishing in Maine has only become better. It starts earlier this year in May. We had in Maine some of the best striped bass fishing that they've seen in, well, maybe ever, and it was in May. Sometimes it occurs in June. This year it was in May. Sharks have been showing up. Last time anyone saw a shark in southern Maine was a long time ago, and now they're fairly regular. Interestingly, in Massachusetts, I had lunch the other day with longtime Massachusetts residents, in fact, former head of Ducks Unlimited, Matt Connolly, and he was talking about how whales are now showing up and down the Massachusetts coast. Bluefish, which many, many years ago were a staple of the fishing world in this part of the East Coast, not so many. So the whole thing is constantly in flux. And when you see year-to-year changes, which over 5 years or a decade, change occurs more dramatically, you don't know why, but we do know along much of the East Coast, striped bass fishing is extremely good where there was none before. Bluefish fishing is not as good where they used to be prevalent. Lobsters appear to be more numerous than they ever have been. They just are now hanging out in different places further out to the ocean and further up the coast. And now we have sharks. And you have sharks because you've got abundant fish for sharks to eat. Sharks aren't going to go somewhere where there's nothing for them to eat. So my report and a synopsis from Maine, everything changes. We see it in the North Woods of Wisconsin. We see it in Minnesota. We see it wherever we go and really pay attention over a period of decades. Nature is not stagnant. Nature is always evolving. As I talked to you this morning, the sun is coming up, and there's a big rock out the window where there used to be seals 25, 30 years ago, full of seals. In fact, it's called Seal Rock. Not so many seals anymore. Why is that? Nobody really seems to know, but nature is always on the move. And this notion that animals and species are not going to adapt. We hear this all the time. The polar bears are threatened and this and that is threatened. We forget that evolution in nature can be a very short period of time. And we also forget that over time, many species go extinct. And in fact, new species are created. We're just here for a little blip in the time of the universe of the world, and we look through things through a different prism maybe than we should at times, but nature is constantly adapting, and I could go on for hours about birds and migrations and how everything's changing before our eyes. And I have a feeling it's always been this way. It's not that a decade passes and nothing changes. I think it's always been in a state of change. The question really is it in a state of more rapid change today? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know that anybody does, because we just don't really have the data, the hard data to tell us if things are changing faster than they used to change. Our lives have certainly sped up, but I can now go out and catch striped bass where I couldn't catch any, and I can't catch bluefish where we used to catch a lot of them. What does that tell us? It tells us that fish move, and we're learning this, and now there's striped bass all the way up through into the Maritimes. They're all through the Miramichi. All these rivers that never had striped bass are full of striped bass. Salmon are down as a result. So my message before I go on the break is, if we pay attention over a period of time, we're going to notice change. Whether that change is caused by us, whether that change is evolutionary, whether that change is because of ocean currents or bait fish, whether that change is because of agricultural crops and birds migrate differently, the one thing for sure is that nature is always evolving. I'll be back in just a moment. When I come back, I'm going to talk about something remarkable that's finally happening. It's actually coming out of Idaho. It's the first of its kind, and it's a task force. It's called the HAT Task Force, Hunting and Advanced Technology Task Force, and it is looking at what constitutes fair game as technology has swept the landscape for people who are hunting and, in fact, fishing. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the great outdoors. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoor Show. Charlie Potter, your host, calling in this morning from the coast of Maine, as I've done for the previous 25 years in the middle of August. Lovely to be in Maine, eating lots of lobster, but also can't wait to get back to the Midwest. The last sultry days of summer and then September 1st. Well, the beginning of dove season and all the seasons that signal that the days are getting shorter, the pulse of nature is getting quicker, and we can't spend enough time outdoors. The state of Idaho, promised before the break I'd talk about this. So we're going to go from Maine, where it's salty and wet, to Idaho, where it's dry and smoky. State of Idaho is the first state of its kind that I'm aware of to put together a task force that will have real teeth to recommend to the Idaho Fish and Game Commission and ultimately the legislature what to do about advanced technology and ensuring fair chase in the sport of hunting. It's long, long overdue. And for those who've listened to me for a long time, I have been singing from this song sheet, well, since robo ducks and spinning wing ducks and babbling ducks and all these decoys that are made to attract ducks that aren't supposed to be around, in my view. In 1918, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act was passed, and it outlawed artificial, except for decoys, actual plastic decoys. It outlawed live decoys for ducks. It outlawed bait for ducks. And I've asked for years, what's the difference between a live decoy quacking and a duck sitting on wings on a battery that spins and dives in the water and comes up and it looks even more like a live duck than a live duck looks? My view, there isn't any. They should be outlawed. Well, the state of Idaho, which is a big game hunting state, so Illinois deer hunters, Midwestern deer hunters, listen up, because I think once these things tend to start, they tend to get traction. Idaho has said, we're not sure that all this technology that's out there actually is not cheapening the sport of hunting or has not tipped the table so for the success of hunters to the detriment of wildlife, that it's not going to cause us to change all kinds of hunting regulations because hunters are so much more successful. Well, that's their reason for starting this, and I applaud that. But before I go there, I have to say this notion that hunters are so much more successful, I don't know that I necessarily think that's true as someone who spends a lot of time in that pursuit. And also, I think that we lose focus of the impact of predation, whether it be wolves or mountain lions on big game, or whether it be ravens on sage grouse and all nesting birds and crows and magpies. The predator-prey relationship is changing dramatically. And we are seeing that across America, everywhere, Illinois as well. But the potential loss of big game hunting opportunity is now on the really on the front burner in so many Western states because they're dealing with populations that are declining. And they want to look at, are hunters a part of this? Because fair chase is no longer taking place. You've got every four-wheeler and every device that can go virtually anywhere. You have drones. You have, obviously, game cameras. You've got extremely high-powered rifles and bow and arrows, archery that are really sophisticated. You've got highly sophisticated black powder guns, slug guns. So the technological ability to follow big game has changed. And I'll give you an example right now of that we didn't used to think about. It's been illegal to get up in an airplane and fly the day of your hunt. You are not allowed to do that anywhere in America or Canada to scout for birds or scout for big game and then get off the airplane and get in your truck or boat or whatever you're getting on ATV and then go to hunt. That's always been illegal. Well, what about using drones? You sit there in a remote parking area high in the mountains of the Colorado Rockies, or you're sitting there in Illinois and you put your drone up in the air and you fly over fields and you have a look and you see where the deer are. Is that fair chase? And then you bring the drone back and then you drive out there and you look for the deer that you just saw with the drone. Or what about game cameras? I personally am a huge fan of game cameras because I think they're so much fun. To be able to put a camera up on a trail and watch what walks by it and sit in your office and look at it on your phone or sit at home and talk about it with your friends and have real-time data, I do think that's one of the really good things about modern technology. It enables us to know what's in our woods, what's in the air. I've had one for many years over a place I love to duck hunt, and it, you know, every time birds come in, it takes pictures of it for me, and I'm not a don't do a huge amount of big game hunting because I spend most of my time bird hunting, but certainly I enjoy big game hunting and knowing that there's a big buck or somebody else sends me a picture of a huge bull elk or maybe an antelope or whatever it might be. That all makes it fun. It connects you to nature. But the question is, how much of that is fair? The camera tells you exactly what time of the day the buck is walking by day after day, exactly where it is. You know more about that buck because of that camera than you ever could have spending time in the woods day after day after day. So it's enabled people who don't spend a lot of time in the outdoors to have the advantage of those who spend a terrific amount of time in the outdoors because the camera tells them what the deer are doing or what the elk are doing or what the birds are doing. I even know a friend who uses them for quail hunting. He puts them on areas where quail come out into fields to feed, and he knows when the coveys are moving. All this has made hunting more interesting. Does it make it more fair? Is it the same thing with fishing? You know, having a device that shows you where the fish are in the water, is a fish finder fair? These are all subjective questions, but Idaho is going at it full bore. They want to evaluate what's fair and what's not fair, and we'll find out what happens. I expect that many other states are going to follow in pursuit, and I also expect the industry, those manufacturing all kinds of gadgets for hunters, are also going to weigh in because, after all, there's a lot of money at stake. A lot of inventions have been made, and they're not going to want to see their favorite items be outlawed as being unfair or not fair chase. At the end of the day, hunting, whether it's between you and an animal or hunting birds, it's all about ethically taking whatever it is you're hunting, consuming what it is you hunt, and respecting the resource. Thanks so much for being with me this morning. I hope you have a great week in the great outdoors. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more. Thanks so much. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.